Stealth Jihad. How Radical Islam is Subverting America Without Guns or Bombs. By Robert Spencer. Narrated by Lloyd James. Copyright 2008 by Robert Spencer. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with Regnery Publishing Incorporated and was produced in the year 2008 by Tantor Media Incorporated, which holds the copyright thereto. Introduction. Terrorism Without Terror. The name of this book is Stealth Jihad, How Radical Islam is Subverting America Without Guns or Bombs. For many people, the title itself will be nonsensical. It is tantamount to saying how the terrorists are winning without terrorism. Most Americans regard the terror threat as one that necessarily involves guns and bombs, and anti-terror efforts as consisting solely in finding terrorist cells and foiling their plans to blow up buildings and kill Americans. If the terrorists have an ideology, many Americans assume that it is an extreme and perverted version of Islam that twists the peaceful teachings of the Quran into a license to kill. They further suppose that the ideological component is minor. They believe that Islamic terrorism is an activity engaged in primarily by the desperately poor, the ignorant, and the manipulated, and that it needs to be countered with education, compassionate hearts and minds initiatives, and financial incentives, as much as with military or law enforcement action. Senator Joseph Biden, Democrat, Delaware, summed up this point of view when he asserted that to compare terrorism with an all-encompassing ideology, like communism and fascism, is evidence of profound confusion. Not only do many influential Americans deny the existence of, or minimize in importance, any common ideology that jihadists around the world may have, they have also taken the recent disarray among terrorist groups, principally Al-Qaeda, as evidence that the jihad ideology is disintegrating, discredited by those who once had been its foremost proponents. Lawrence Wright, author of The Looming Tower, Al-Qaeda and the Road to 9/11, fostered this perception in a lengthy New Yorker article, The Rebellion Within, An Al-Qaeda Mastermind Questions Terrorism, in June 2008. In it, Wright relates that one of Al-Qaeda's chief theorists has rejected terrorism. This news led to a cascade of both liberal and conservative voices, rejoicing that the end of the war on terror is at hand. Unfortunately, reality, as is usually the case, is not quite so comforting. The subject of Wright's piece, Sayyid Imam al-Sharif, also known as Dr. Fadl, does not reject the idea that Muslims must strive to subjugate unbelievers under the rule of Islamic law. He simply advocates a change in strategy. Less terrorism, more stealth jihad. This revelation shouldn't make Americans go back to sleep. It should spur them to become aware of the ways in which the jihadist agenda of Islamic supremacism is advancing without guns and bombs. In one key passage, Montasser al-Zayat, whom Wright identifies as an Islamist lawyer, offends Al-Qaeda second-in-command Ayman al-Zawahiri by asserting that jihad did not have to be restricted to an armed approach. This is indicative of the wishful thinking that so many have brought to their reading of Wright's article. Zayat didn't reject the necessity of waging jihad against infidels. He just denied that it had to be restricted to an armed approach. Many readers mistakenly assumed he was denouncing jihad altogether. Zawahiri, says Wright, became increasingly isolated. He understood that violence was the fuel that kept the radical Islamist organizations running. They had no future without terror. That may be so for some organizations. Others, such as the Muslim Brotherhood, get along just fine without violence. In fact, the Brotherhood, as we shall see, is the key force behind the stealth jihad agenda, which aims to establish Islamic law in the West. In any case, the Brotherhood, according to Wright, wrote a series of books and pamphlets, collectively known as The Revisions, in which they formally explained their new thinking. Wright met with the Grand Mufti of Egypt, Sheikh Ali Goma'a, to ask him about this. Wright calls Goma'a a highly promoted champion of moderate Islam. This description in itself shows the inadequacy of speaking only of terrorism without recognizing the myriad ways in which the jihad agenda is advancing. Goma'a may indeed be a highly promoted champion of moderate Islam, but he has also expressed support for the terrorist group Hezbollah. Goma'a, Wright continues, has also become an advocate for Muslim women, who, he says, should have equal standing with men. Yet he is also an advocate for Muslim women, who has spoken positively for wife-beating. His forceful condemnations of extreme forms of Islam, says Wright, have made him an object of hatred among Islamists and an icon among progressives, whose voices have been overpowered by the thunder of the radicals. Yet Goma'a's forceful condemnations of extreme forms of Islam have been accompanied by his denial of reports that he had rejected the traditional Islamic death sentence for apostates. In fact, Goma'a openly declares that all his revisions are only intended as temporary measures. He tells Wright, "We accept the revisions conditionally, not as the true teachings of Islam, but with the understanding that this process is like medicine for a particular time." In other words, the true teachings of Islam include the mandate to wage violent jihad against unbelievers. But jihad violence can temporarily be set aside for strategic reasons, as medicine for a particular time. That is, different times call for different tactics, but the overall objective remains the same. After outlining various reasons why, in Fadl's new view, today's global jihad is illegitimate, Wright informs us that Fadl does not condemn all jihadist activity. To the contrary, Fadl says that jihad in Afghanistan will lead to the creation of an Islamic state and the triumph of the Taliban, God willing, and that if it were not for the jihad in Palestine, the Jews would have crept toward the neighboring countries a long time ago. As for September 11, Fadl asks, "What good is it if you destroy one of your enemy's buildings, and he destroys one of your countries? What good is it if you kill one of his people, and he kills 1,000 of yours?" That, in short, is my evaluation of 9/11. In other words, it was not morally wrong, just tactically stupid. This is no rejection of jihad, it is just a change in tactics. It should make us all the more aware of and on guard against the stealth jihad. The stealth jihad. In this audiobook, I offer evidence for the proposition that terror attacks involving bombings and shootings are not the sum total of terrorist aspirations, but are just one component of a larger initiative. The goal of that initiative is the imposition of jihadists' ideology all over the world, over their fellow Muslims and non-Muslims alike. That ideology may be summed up by the phrase radical Islam, although that term is used in many different ways. Some use it to suggest that the core teachings of Islam are essentially peaceful, and that it is only radicals, those who distort those teachings into radical Islam, who are responsible for violence committed in Islam's name. I am not using the phrase in that way. Rather, I have long contended that Islam is unique among the major world religions in having a developed doctrine, theology, and legal system mandating warfare against and the subjugation of unbelievers. There is no orthodox sect or school of Islam that teaches that Muslims must coexist peacefully as equals with non-Muslims on an indefinite basis. I use the term radical Islam merely to distinguish those Muslims who are actively working to advance this subjugation from the many millions who are not, as well as to emphasize that the stealth jihad program is truly radical. It aims at nothing less than the transformation of American society and the imposition of Islamic law here, subjugating women and non-Muslims to the status of legal inferiors. Those who are working to advance the subjugation of non-Muslims are not doing it solely by violent means. The common distinction between radical and moderate Muslims is generally been made between those who are engaged in blowing things up, or are plotting to do so, and those who are not. However, the evidence presented in this book shows that the distinction ought to be placed elsewhere. Between those Muslims who believe that Islamic law is the perfect system for human society, and who are working by whatever means to impose that Islamic law, and those Muslims who support Western pluralistic governments and societies and seek to live with non-Muslims as equals, under secular rule, on an indefinite basis. Those who are working to advance the hegemony of Islamic law do so in innumerable ways, including by introducing it bit by bit into American society and demanding that Americans accommodate it, by shouting down any and all who dare to discuss the supremacist impulse within traditional and mainstream Islam, and by engaging in efforts to transform and control Western economies. The West today faces the threat of stealth jihadists. By using this term, I am not implying that they operate in secret. To the contrary, one of the key characteristics distinguishing them from their violent counterparts is that they carry out their business openly, carefully constructing a facade of moderation. What is stealth about these operatives is their ultimate agenda. They are not seeking to protect Muslims' civil rights from the rampant Islamophobia that ostensibly plagues Western societies, as they claim. Rather, they are leading a full-scale effort to transform pluralistic societies into Islamic states, and to sweep away Western notions of legal equality, freedom of conscience, freedom of speech, and more. The stealth jihadists have already made significant inroads into American life. They are well-funded, well-organized, and persistent. They will not be pacified by negotiations, compromises, or concessions. They cannot be bought off. And every day they are advancing their agenda, while most Americans don't even know they exist. In his controversial book, America Alone, Mark Stain suggests that Europe is falling to the Islamic Jihad, and that only America will be left as a bulwark against Islamization. But it is unclear how much of a bulwark we will be if we allow our freedoms and way of life to be eroded in the name of getting along. That is exactly what is happening today. The stealth jihadists are working energetically to wear away the very fabric of American culture. It is happening right now, under our noses. Chapter 1. Muslims trying to take over the USA? You've got to be kidding. The Grand Jihad. The Muslim Brotherhood must understand that their work in America is a kind of grand jihad in eliminating and destroying the Western civilization from within, and sabotaging its miserable house by their hands and the hands of the believers, so that it is eliminated and Allah's religion is made victorious over all other religions. We reject the UN, reject America, reject all law and order. Don't lobby Congress or protest, because we don't recognize Congress. The only relationship you should have with America is to topple it. Eventually, there will be a Muslim in the White House dictating the laws of Sharia. Let us damn America. Let us damn Israel. Let us damn them and their allies until death. Very soon, Allah willing, Rome will be conquered, just like Constantinople was, as was prophesied by our Prophet Muhammad. Today, Rome is the capital of the Catholics, or the Crusader capital. This capital of theirs will be an advanced post for the Islamic conquests, which will spread through Europe in its entirety, and then will turn to the two Americas. I have complete faith that Islam will invade Europe and America, because Islam has logic and a mission. Islam isn't in America to be equal to any other faith, but to become dominant. The Quran should be the highest authority in America, and Islam the only accepted religion on earth. I won't want to create the impression that I won't like the government of the United States to be Islamic sometime in the future. If only Muslims were clever politically, they could take over the United States and replace its constitutional government with a caliphate. Ravings of a lone crank? If only they were. In reality, these statements were made by 8 separate speakers, including some of the most influential Islamic spokesmen and leaders in the United States. Nor were they indulging in wishful thinking or empty braggadocio, however far they may be from actually attaining their goals. Rather, they were enunciating in various ways an agenda that many Muslims within the U.S. are pursuing today. They envision not only a Muslim president, but that the United States Constitution be replaced or amended so as to comply in all particulars with Islamic Sharia law. These would not simply be small or cosmetic changes that would leave America's foundations intact. Whether the United States has a Baptist president or a Methodist president or a Jewish president or a Catholic president would almost certainly make little difference in policy or law. But a Muslim president who began to institute Islamic law in the United States, as these men envision it, would make for a very large difference indeed. Those who are advancing this agenda are striving for nothing less than an Islamic conquest of North America, after which not only the government will be Islamic, but so will society as a whole. Even if a majority of Americans do not convert to Islam, Islam will be dominant. Islamic perspectives will reign supreme. Non-Muslims will have to cater to Islamic sensibilities, and Islamic law will govern not only Muslim communities, but non-Muslims as well. This will also include, most important of all, the Islamization of the mainstream media and the public sphere. Yes, that can mean stonings for adultery and amputations for theft, but it means much more as well. Islamic law is an enormous complex of regulations governing every aspect of human existence, and it institutionalizes discrimination on the basis of gender and religion. Could this ever happen here? Of course not, most analysts confidently reply. In the minds of our academic, political, and media elites, the advent of Sharia law in the U.S. is about as likely as a return to prohibition or the Libertarian Party candidate being elected president. And yet, while the groups advancing the Islamic agenda may be small, they are by no means powerless, and in no sense discredited. In fact, they are in many cases extraordinarily well-financed and surprisingly influential. And even if one grants for the sake of argument that they will never be able to attain their goals in all their fullness, there is no doubt whatsoever that there are Muslims in the United States today, as well as outside it, who are working to accomplish exactly those goals. One of the best weapons they have on their side is that very few, even among law enforcement or government officials, are even aware that this agenda exists, or that anyone is advancing it, or by what means. For this is a jihad, a struggle to advance the cause of Islam, the cause of Allah. But it is a jihad without any of the signs that law enforcement officials are trained to recognize as indications of terrorist activity. There are no guns and bombs, no terrorist training manuals, no open glorification of blood-drenched thugs. It is a jihad that advances without violent attacks at a time when almost all our anti-terror resources and energy are devoted to heading off another violent attack on American soil. Many American officials, and officials all over the Western world, persist in regarding the problem we face solely as a terrorism threat, consisting entirely of the possibility of attacks against civilians and the work of preventing those attacks. During the 2008 presidential campaign, we heard many candidates speak about the terrorism threat, or in the case of failed Democratic hopeful John Edwards, the absence of such a threat. But no one dealt with the possibility that the terrorist agenda, might be advancing through non-terrorist means. Most analysts inside and outside of government don't possess the knowledge necessary to understand or to recognize the implications of the fact that the jihadists might be laboring to advance their goals without any terror attacks at all. It is a jihad, but one whose leaders work within American communities and organizations, and quite often have won the respect and gratitude of their non-Muslim colleagues and peers. It is a jihad whose leaders enjoy the respect of the mainstream media, who often aid and abet their efforts to present themselves as benign civil rights advocates and conceal their actual agenda. It is a jihad, but one that has a good chance to transform American society before most Americans have any idea of what's happening. It should rightly be called a stealth jihad. The main player. As we'll see, the work that many Muslims in the United States today are undertaking to advance this stealth jihad is already doing significant damage to our legal systems, our financial systems, and our sense of ourselves as a society. Even if the United States never becomes an Islamic state, and it may seem fanciful that it ever would, this damage will not be easily repaired. Are all Muslims in the United States involved in such an effort? Of course not. To say that some Muslims in this country are working to advance a supremacist agenda that would subvert the Constitution doesn't mean that all are. There is a spectrum of belief, knowledge, and fervor among Muslims, as there is among devotees of every belief system, religious or not. And so there are innumerable Muslims in this country today who are happy to live in a pluralistic society in which there is no established religion. But it is no less true that there are also untold numbers of Muslims within the United States who are working today to make the U.S., someday, into an Islamic state. Although they often have links to jihadist terrorist organizations, they don't need any terror attack to advance their agenda. In fact, many of them would regard one, if it does come, as an actual hindrance to their efforts. The chief player in this stealth jihad in America today is the shadowy international organization known as the Muslim Brotherhood. The Brotherhood, in Arabic, Al-Ikhwan al-Muslimun, is an international Islamic organization that has, in the course of its tumultuous 8 decades of existence, given rise to the jihad terror groups Hamas and Al-Qaeda. An earnest and pious Muslim named Hassan al-Banna founded the group in Egypt in 1928, in part as a response to the establishment of a secular, non-Islamic government in Turkey and the abolition of the caliphate, the office of the successor of Muhammad that had stood for centuries as the symbol of Islamic unity and political power. With his brotherhood, al-Banna wanted to revive the political aspects of Islam that had retreated with the decline of the Ottoman Empire and the advent of Western colonialism. He decried the separation of the state from religion in a country which was, until recently, the site of the commander of the faithful. His Islam was inherently and essentially political. He wrote, "We summon you to Islam, the teachings of Islam, the laws of Islam, and the guidance of Islam. And if this smacks of politics in your eyes, then it is our policy. Islam does have a policy embracing the happiness of this world. We believe that Islam is an all-embracing concept that regulates every aspect of life, adjudicating on every one of its concerns and prescribing for it a solid and rigorous order." Al-Banna wrote in 1934 that it is a duty incumbent on every Muslim to struggle towards the aim of making every people Muslim and the whole world Islamic, so that the banner of Islam can flutter over the earth and the call of the muezzin can resound in all the corners of the world. God is greatest. Allahu Akbar. He further instructed his followers, "Islam is faith and worship, a country and a citizenship, a religion and a state. It is spirituality and hard work. It is a Quran and a sword." The Brotherhood was no ragtag gathering of marginalized kooks. It grew in Egypt from 150 branches in 1936 to as many as 1,500 by 1944. In 1939, Al-Banna counted 100,000 pious youths from the Muslim Brothers from all parts of Egypt. Although the foremost historian of the Brotherhood movement, Brenyar Lia, believes he was exaggerating then. Nevertheless, by 1944, membership was estimated at between 100,000 and 500,000. By 1937, the Brotherhood had expanded beyond Egypt, setting up several branches in Sudan, Saudi Arabia, Palestine, Syria, Lebanon, and Morocco, and one each in Bahrain, Hyderabad, and Djibouti, and, Lia adds portentously, Paris. These many thousands dispersed around the world heard Al-Banna's call to prepare for jihad and be lovers of death. But the Brotherhood's modus operandi involves much more than blood and death and terror. Scholar Martin Kramer notes that the Brotherhood had a double identity. On one level, they operated openly as a membership organization of social and political awakening. Al-Banna preached moral revival, and the Muslim Brethren engaged in good works. On another level, however, the Muslim Brethren created a secret apparatus that acquired weapons and trained adepts in their use. That double identity has in America today become the instrument for conducting the stealth jihad. It takes the form of groups that appear outwardly to be moderate, but advance the jihadist agenda through various non-violent initiatives, even while the groups themselves and many of those involved in them have ties to violent jihadist organizations. The plan. I have complete faith that Islam will invade Europe and America because Islam has logic and a mission. Muhammad Mahdi Othman Akef made that statement in 2004 when he took over leadership of the Muslim Brotherhood. But he didn't mean an invasion of armies, or even of bomb-wielding terrorists. The Europeans and the Americans, he explained, will come into the bosom of Islam out of conviction. Forming that conviction in the minds of European and American non-Muslims would take a concerted effort spanning years and comprising many fronts. But the ultimate goal of the stealth jihad is clear: the elimination of Western civilization. This was unequivocally enunciated by a top Brotherhood operative in this country, Muhammad Akram, who explained that the Muslim Brotherhood must understand that their work in America is a kind of grand jihad in eliminating and destroying the Western civilization from within, and sabotaging its miserable house by their hands and the hands of the believers, so that it is eliminated, and Allah's religion is made victorious over all other religions. Akram's directive came in a Muslim Brotherhood memorandum from May 22, 1991, entitled An Explanatory Memorandum on the General Strategic Goal for the Group in North America. The document came to light during the 2007 trial of what had been the largest Islamic charity in the United States, the Holy Land Foundation for Relief and Development, which was accused of funneling charitable donations to the jihad terror group Hamas. The case ended in a mistrial on most charges, and the defendants, who are pleading not guilty, are now being retried. In the memorandum, Akram lays out a plan to do nothing less than conquer and Islamize the United States. The Brotherhood's success in America would ultimately further an even larger goal of establishing a global Islamic state. Akram seems to be aware of how fantastical his goal might sound, even to his fellow Muslim brothers. He claims his plans are not abundant extravagance, imaginations or hallucinations which passed in the mind of one of your brothers, but they are rather hopes, ambitions, and challenges that I hope that you share some or most of which with me. Arguing that those hopes and ambitions can become reality, Akram says that he perceives a glimpse of hope, that we have embarked on a new stage of Islamic activism stages in this continent. A new stage, yes, but not a new plan. The plan he is elucidating, he explains, is not
Sample complete. Ready to continue?